Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, and thank you for joining me on the English program. I'm Linda Bordoni, and here's a taste of what we'll be talking about today. Pope Benedict XVI appeals for an end to racism and forms of unjust discrimination. Benedictine abbot Timothy Wright picks up on the theme of the resurrection and reflects on our journey of faith. We hear about the forgotten conflict in the West African nation of Chad and of the experiences of a JRS volunteer in the region. And film critic Peter Malone takes us into the world of Watchmen, a work based on one of the most celebrated graphic novels ever written. Pope Benedict XVI on Sunday marked the fourth anniversary of his election to the papacy with an appeal for an end to racism and to forms of unjust discrimination. Chris Altieri has this report.
The Holy Father made his appeal following the Regina Caeli prayer in remarks to the faithful gathered in the courtyard of the Apostolic Retreat in Castel Gandolfo.
Si richiede un'azione ferma e concreta.
The Pope said resolute and concrete action is needed on both the national and the international levels to prevent and eliminate every form of discrimination and intolerance. The Holy Father went on to say a vast work of education is needed in which the dignity of the person is exalted and his rights protected.
Nel clima di gioia che proviene dalla fede in Cristo risorto.
The Holy Father also used the context of the Regina Caeli prayer to reflect on his 4 years of papacy, telling the faithful he never feels lonely, and that during the octave of Easter he felt the communion that surrounds and sustains him. A spiritual solidarity, explained Pope Benedict, nurtured by prayer, manifests itself in a thousand ways. The Pope went on to say that it is God's merciful love, which continues today as always to unite the Church soundly and make one family of all mankind. The divine love that forgives us our sins and brings us inner renewal through the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ.
Animato da tale intima convinzione, il mio amato predecessore, Giovanni Paolo II.
This, said Pope Benedict, was why Pope John Paul II dedicated this second Sunday of Easter to the divine mercy, to point out the risen Christ as the true source of all hope and trust. Following the traditional Eastertide prayer, Pope Benedict offered greetings to the gathered faithful in many languages, including English.
As we rejoice in the new life, since the risen Christ is won for us, let us renew our resolve to be faithful to our baptismal promises by rejecting Satan and living according to the example of the Lord. In our prayer, we commend our perseverance to the intercession of Mary, Queen of Heaven. Upon all of you, I invoke God's abundant blessings of peace and joy.
I'm Chris Altieri.
Thanks there to Chris Altieri for that report. The octave day of Easter, sometimes known as Low Sunday, and also known historically as St. Thomas Sunday, is the Sunday after Easter Sunday, now officially known as the second Sunday of Easter. Well, St. Thomas Sunday is so called because the Gospel reading always relates the story of Doubting Thomas, in which Thomas the Apostle comes to believe in the resurrection of Jesus, only after being told by the resurrected Christ to place his finger in the nail marks and his hand in his side. In the Gospel accounts, this event takes place on the eighth day after the resurrection, hence their significance for this Sunday. Benedictine abbot Timothy Wright picks up on the theme of the resurrection and talks about our journey of faith.
In these accounts of the resurrection, the one thing that is a little bit surprising is that recognition doesn't come at once. Looking carefully at the readings for Easter week, we notice that there is a dynamism in the understanding of what this risen faith is about and the orientation that it should take. It's not something we grasp with the mind and then go back to where we were before. It's not something we, in a sense, touch with our hands and say, thank you very much, I've now got it in my hands, I'm okay. No, at the heart of these resurrection appearances and the dynamism in it is the journey of faith. or put it this way, the journey into a faith, which is massively expanded by the fact that Jesus has risen from the dead. So what do I mean? What I mean is that we can't talk about resurrection until we've really made the journey to resurrection. That the risen Christ has communicated with us at a level which I say, I believe. You remember Thomas had a few doubts and then said, "My Lord and my God." And Jesus said, "Blessed are those who have not seen yet believe." And that's you and me. So in a real sense, our journey into faith, into risen faith, is relived during this Easter week. And it is a journey into love. And the heart of that love is to know that I am as I am because I am loved as I am. It's nothing to do with sin. It's nothing to do with my mental reservations. It's to do with where the fundamentals of my heart really lie. And the heart only lies in resurrection if it meets the heart of Jesus, alive, giving resurrection, giving faith in resurrection, giving the conviction that the risen life is real for me, for you, for everyone else. But to start, it has to come into my heart. It therefore has to be powerful enough to overcome all those scars that my heart carries. Scars of childhood, of adolescent misunderstanding, of mistakes in my younger years, of my pride in my older years. The scars of, putting it bluntly, not being a very good paid-up Catholic. And to recognize that those scars are all healed in this journey to resurrection, offered by Jesus, risen from the dead, celebrated particularly each year at this moment. But this is not, as I said before, a possession which we hold on to and grasp as if it was the crown jewels of our own being. The essence of this gift is to pass it on. Because in passing it on, not only do we give it to someone else, share it with someone else, but we grow in ourselves as well, in our own understanding of what resurrection is about. Because in living and preaching and acting the risen Christ, what we're doing is saying, you're my friend now, but you are my friend for eternity in the risen Christ. And your heart and my heart, however different they may have been, in our political, commercial, familial relationships, good, not so good, downright difficult, whatever the situation, but now in the risen Christ, that's all healed. We're starting a new journey into this expanded understanding of what life is in resurrection in Christ. We give it to our brothers, as Jesus said to the women, go tell your brothers. And we are told, go tell our brothers and sisters. And then we take that on further. And we communicate to our friends, our communities, men and women, lovers and not so loving, damaged and healed, but to each in a special way. This unasked for, unearned gift of the risen love brings to their lives an enrichment and a hope and a vision for the future, which takes them out of the horrid, suffering, limited, angry world of the present in which so many of us are forced to live. But that has to be brought to the disciples, to all people, and most especially to the other, the one who is at the opposite pole to myself, in thought, in age, in culture, in language, in belief, in moral behavior, but still one in the created vision of God. and to that person too, in ways that are totally appropriate. Not proselytizing, not preaching, but just being. Being inspired by, but not named as, the resurrection of Christ. Inspired by something so special that it cannot fail to be noticed without the jargon which would put people off. It is being resurrection, being the risen Christ, which is our greatest gift and our greatest obligation to give to the other. And that is building up the body of Christ, in which there are no boundaries. Christ doesn't put limits on the extent of his faith. His resurrection was for all, and the only way it is not for all is when the other turns it down. And we have to be sure that he or she is not turning it down because of the way we talk about it, the way we behave with it. So we take from this week of celebration of Easter the wonderful thought that we have a treasure for everyone which will improve everyone. And it is up to us to live that gift as the gift we have received, and we share with everyone at every time, wherever we are. Amen.
I was at my desk a short while ago when I received a telephone call from James Stapleton, Communications Coordinator at JRS, Jesuit Refugee Service, that has its central offices just across the road from here. He told me that one of their volunteers was passing through Rome after a 2-year stint in West Africa and was wondering whether I would like to speak to her. Of course, I said, West Africa is an area we rarely speak about, so bring her round, I said. I'm very interested to hear about JRS's work in the region and about her experience there. Well, when I went downstairs to meet her, I was almost bowled over. Ashley Gagnier is a beautiful and slender young girl who wouldn't look out of place at a beauty contest. Not exactly the kind of person you would imagine operating in a war zone and in setting up refugee camps, but appearances can be deceiving, and I asked her to tell me something about Jesuit Refugee Service and what it does.
JRS is an international Catholic organization, and we have a mandate to serve, accompany, and defend forcibly displaced people. So we work in countries of war, and we have regional offices throughout the world. We work in about 57 different countries, and we provide emergency relief, but with a sort of sustainable approach.
Ashley told me that she had just spent 2 years based in the West African country of Ivory Coast. Initially, she said, she followed 3 projects for refugees that were based in the north, but thankfully, living conditions there are improving, and JRS is refocalizing its work there.
The situation in Côte d'Ivoire has stabilized a little bit, so we're starting one small project there. It's a school reconstruction project, and we offer some teacher training in collaboration with the government in Côte d'Ivoire.
Because education is one of your concerns.
Yes, yes. JRS is definitely strong in education in our refugee services. So, yes, in Côte d'Ivoire, we have our education project in the north, where there are a lot of needy populations that were especially affected by the civil war.
And until 2008, Ashley told me, JRS was also present in Liberia and in Guinea.
We were working in refugee camps for Liberian refugees and Ivorian refugees in those countries, also sites for internally displaced persons.
Right, so mm-hmm. These mostly refugees who are fleeing conflict?
Yes, yes, okay. Yes, that are fleeing war.
In their own countries, or do they come from neighboring African countries?
Right, there's a mix of all different. You have Liberian refugees fleeing to Guinea, you have Ivorian refugees fleeing to Liberia. Our region has seen a transition in the past couple of years where we've phased down our projects in Liberia and Guinea, where we've currently closed all projects, and now we're focusing more on Chad and Central African Republic. So there are a lot of internally displaced Chadians that are fleeing violence, but they're still within the borders of their own country. They're still facing a lot of the hardships that refugees face, but they're internally displaced. And then there are a lot of Sudanese refugees in Chad.
Coming from Darfur region.
Coming from the Darfur region of mm-hmm. Sudan. And yes, the conflict in Chad is very complicated.
The conflict in Chad, it seems to me, is so complicated that no one ever talks about it, me included. And that is just not on.
The conflict in Chad, you have Chadian rebel groups that are fighting government forces. There's a lot of intercommunal, inter-ethnic problems along the border. You have a lot of sedentary communities that are fighting for resources with cattle breeders. So there are a lot of inter-ethnic problems. There's the governmental forces fighting the rebel forces, and then you have spillover of the Darfur conflict and Sudan fighting Chad. So it's a very complicated situation.
One of the reasons JRS employs many of the locals to work within their projects, Ashley explained, is to make it easier to pass on the reins when JRS pulls out.
In refugee camps, we have refugees that are actually implementing the projects, you know, school directors in refugee camps that are themselves refugees, that are providing training to other refugees. So, yes, we try to include and reinforce the capacity of the people that we are actually serving.
Mm. Some people spend years and years of their lives in refugee camps.
Mm-hmm.
How strange a life is it? What is it like to live in a refugee camp?
That's a really good question that I often ask myself, because you can go in and you can be with the people. You always have the option of leaving, and you know that people stay. Yes, refugee camps are, I mean, they're small societies that are basically cut off from the rest of the world, in a sense. People's movement is restricted. They can't really move around freely. They depend on, you know, food donations, things like this. But it's very important to try to create a sense of normalcy in these camps, providing schools, providing cultural centers, so that people feel that, you know, they are part of a community while they're in exile. And yes, there have been children that are, you know, born in refugee camps and they're raised. They spend, you know, years of their lives in these camps. But to try to make it a place of growth, even despite the difficulties.
It must be a really hard reality for a young girl such as yourself to deal with. Mm-hmm. What was the impact like when you first started doing this work, and why do you do it?
Well, for me, I mean, my position was administrative, but I did have many, many opportunities to interact with refugees and be in the camps. And I don't know, I was struck by people's graciousness to have a conversation with somebody from outside. I guess in a sense, I mean, part of the reason why I went was because I didn't want there to be divisions, you know, between, okay, here, this is refugees, these people are from, you know, these countries, and the situation is difficult for them. I wanted to try to break down those divisions and those barriers. And yeah, a challenge for me is to be with other people and to sort of deny these divisions. But I find that you know, our staff that work every day in the camps and with beneficiaries, they really can form some human connections and human relationships with people. And I think that's the source of any success in the program, is based on these kinds of good relationships between people.
What are your strongest memories? What would you bring back with you from these situations?
When I sit down with some people that have been involved in JRS projects from the very beginning, and they see sort of the effect of the project, for example, establishing schools in a site for internally displaced people, and you speak with people that have lived great horrors, but they can still say that they have hope, and that they feel like they have an identity in their work, let's say teaching children or directing a school. And of course, there's there's a sense of openness in West Africa where I lived. People are always available for you. I don't know. Personally, I feel alive. I don't know how to explain it. I always feel like I'm completely alive when I'm spending time in these countries, and I have a sense of purpose that I don't always feel when I'm, you know, sitting in my office and at home.
Does faith play a role in participating in a project such as this one?
For me personally, yes, faith does play a role. We can talk about social justice, and we can talk about sustainable development and emergency relief. But underneath all of this, yes, you know, you have faith that, you know, together you can change situations with people, and that if you continue working to improve lives in a human way based on love and faith, then you can succeed in this way. So yeah, for me, the spiritual aspect is really, really important. It's what gives you strength, what keeps you going.
Time was drawing to a close, and Ashley had to get going back to JRS headquarters first, and then, of course, to her life in the United States. But before saying goodbye, is there anything, I asked, you would like to add before leaving?
I just hope that as the world is getting smaller and, you know, globalization plays a more important role, I hope that we can stay informed, we can stay aware of these populations, these people that are so forgotten, that are in these situations that are so much larger than themselves, and speaking of governments and all. And I think we can all play a role in staying informed, and in some small way, whether we are living in Italy or the United States or, you know, Cote d'Ivoire, there are ways that we can try to make changes in our daily lives that will help these people.
Yes, staying aware is just a small change that we can make in our daily lives to help these people. Help them not to be the forgotten people of yet another forgotten war. Help them not to be the forgotten men giving their lives for the greed of others. Help them not to be the forgotten women with no food for their children. Help them not to be the forgotten children with no education with which to build a future. And now we go over to our friend film critic Peter Malone, who heads the film office at Cygnus, the World Catholic Association for Communication. Today he speaks about a film in current release that opened up a whole new world for me. The film is entitled Watchmen, a work based on the celebrated graphic novel created by Dave Gibbons and Alan Moore.
Now, I even had to look up what a graphic novel is.
Oh, dear, oh, dear. Do you mean to say you haven't been looking at all these graphic novel films lately?
Oh, dear. I must confess. Would you like to tell us what a graphic novel is?
By the way, before I say that, I think most of the graphic novels and the films are very much macho and oriented towards a male audience.
Thank you,
rather
Peter.
Than women. So I think, yes, you're on the safe side. Actually, they derive from the comic strips. When you think back, I don't know whether you looked at comic strips when you were younger, but we had Dick Tracy and Captain Marvel and Superman and things like that. And as the years have gone on, these have been taken very seriously by a lot of consumers, and writers then have imagined novels based on these characters, and they draw them, so that a graphic novel is a visual novel with those little balloons there with the dialogue. And sometimes the films sound a bit the same way.
So it's like a long comic with a complex plot.
That's a very good description, but I'm not sure that the writers of the graphic novels would be very happy to hear that. But yes, I must remember that. Steal it for another review. Send a happy tune,
the boy that cries through you. You say you found this film most impressive.
Visually, I think it's very impressive. I quite enjoy a lot of the graphic novels, but you wonder at times, you know, the world that they create. The director of this film, his name is Zack Snyder. He previously did a film of a graphic novel about Thermopylae and the Spartans, and it was a very odd film, hyper macho, I think, and the acting was according to, I think, a long comic strip, and the acting rather cartoon-like and wooden. This one, he's made it much more, I suppose, intense. The performances are very strong, and the film goes for almost 3 hours.
Well, I must say, I watched the trailer. I was quite mesmerised by it. I don't like violent films. It's not the kind of film I'd go and see in a cinema, but I was really impressed also by the soundtrack.
Yes, they've used a great range of music, very interestingly, right throughout the film, classic and modern. The Englishman who wrote it thought that it couldn't be visualised on screen, and in fact he won't look at it himself. But as an alternate world and some kind of look at an alternate America, I found it very, very interesting. The moral perspective certainly raises a lot of questions, because these watchmen, a whole range of heroes like Dick Tracy and co, have actually been banned by the government from the 1970s on, and they still feel the need to, you know, avenge crime or be active. And it becomes then very complex about who's authentic, who's exploiting things, and where will the truth lie.
The world will look up and shout, "Save us." I'll whisper, "No."
But it's an alternate world, because President Nixon was re-elected for a third presidency, and so it's imagining what it might have been like in the 1980s if there had been no change in the president. I hope that explains a little bit.
It's very complicated. You do say it's not a film for the wider audience.
No, it hasn't been as popular as they hoped, because I think a lot of people will find it very difficult to follow and hard to imagine.
I think it has a bit of a cult following, doesn't it?
Yes, and I'm sure it will in the coming years. It's so well made, so visually interesting, and the music, as you say, some very interesting performances as well, but quite offbeat and probably, as you say, yes, a cult following.
And for those of you who enjoy having the creeps every now and then, don't forget to join Peter next week at this same time for a chilling taste of two neat little thrillers with a touch of the supernatural, The Uninvited and Haunting. That's all from the English feature programme today, and from me, Linda Bordoni. But we'll be back at this same time tomorrow, so join us then. You can also listen to our programmes on the internet at www.vaticanradio.org. You're listening to Vatican Radio's English program. Laudetur Jesus Christus.